What's up, Falcons fans? It wasn't a great season, but depending on who you ask, it was great. And the Falcons overachieved, or, you know, they severely underachieved. Today, we've got two guests, two of the biggest draft nerds on Falcons Twitter that I know of. We've got Hunter Thompson and Dampski. Say what's up to the folks.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
What's up? What's up? How's it going?
Tell them where they can find you.
Okay. You guys can find me on Twitter at HThompsonNFL. I write over at Neptune Scouting, Falcons ATV, Falcons Nest Podcast, all that shit. So,
I do a little bit of Falcons Nest, ATB. That's really it. A lot of shit on Twitter there, but follow me at Dampski32 on there.
Yeah, these guys are great. They put in the time and effort to really nail down these prospects. So this will be a good episode. You should really put some weight into what these guys have to say. I wanted to begin where everyone, all Falcons fans, are curious what we're going to do. It's the 8th overall pick. We finished 7-10. We're picking in that range that, you know, you could still find elite caliber players. Players like Kyle Pitts and, you know, Kyle Hamilton, per se, generally fall, even though, you know, they're probably the best non-quarterback prospects in their respective classes. That's just because needy teams draft quarterbacks where they probably shouldn't. So I'd like to begin with the 8th pick and some of the guys that we like, particularly for the Falcons. I know, you know, sometimes it doesn't always work out how we like, but what do you guys say? I'll start with you, Dampski.
It's funny. I just told Hunter he could start for everything, but I'll let you guys pitch Kyle Hamilton. I feel like everybody's on board with that and Sauce Gardner. So I'll go off the rocker a little bit. I'll go DeMarvin Leal from Texas A&M. I really feel like he's a dominant. People call him a defensive tackle. I've been fighting the fight to keep him at defensive end. For me, it's just like, if he's showing you that he can win as a defensive end, why are we going to put him at defensive tackle? I think he can play everywhere between like defense end all the way to 5-tech, 4-tech, which is like inside the offensive tackle. And then he's played even a little bit of reps at nose guard, like directly right over the center. I personally like him as a defensive end just because he's so like quick twitch and he can beat you outside, but he can also beat you inside. But then he surprises you with like this really like ox-like strength where he can just bulldoze you right into the ground. He's a guy that's just absolutely dominant on so many levels, and he's a guy that I've kind of been trying to stick at 8, but I feel like a lot of people are counting him out. But he's like, if you look at the way DMPs likes to move his D-line around, like he kind of fits that mold on guys that can play anywhere and can rush from anywhere. So he's a guy that I very keenly really, really like. I really feel like people are counting him out, and they really shouldn't, because I feel like he's just so scheme versatile, and he's a really big physical. And he fits the archetype that Terry Fontenot likes, which is like bigger defensive end that don't really have to come off the field on third and one through two down, and then third down as well. So he's a guy that I really, really like.
Yeah, Leal's one of those guys too. I feel like he's had some tough luck with prospect fatigue. It's a real thing. You can do absolutely nothing wrong, but if you kind of just hang around where your draft stock is, you'll just draft naturally because people, or you'll just drop naturally because people are tired of hearing your name. There's always something new. Somebody new is gonna swipe in front of you. The next big thing's gonna come in front of you. You get pushed down the board, well, mock draft boards at least. But Leal's a great player, absolutely.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, people watched his Bama game and said he had a bad game according to PFF, and like, I have such a love-hate relationship with that website, because like you watch that game in the first half, he had four pressures, two sacks, and I think like three hurries. I just don't like, regardless of what he did the rest of the game, like he did his job that first half. So they were second half, they probably went to more chip blocks towards him and stuff. So therefore, yeah, his grade's gonna fall. But you look at it in a long standpoint, like he was still a dominant player in that game, right?
You're talking about Nick Saban going into halftime and scheming against him. Like, that's not that's something it. That that's every exactly guy can it. Just shake off. Yeah.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus is a very useful tool when it supports my narrative, and if it doesn't, then it's the worst thing out there. So
that's exactly it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, though, that, you know, some more casual fans might not totally grasp the concept of versatile defensive linemen. They might not understand what that means. Basically, Dean Pease runs a lot of even and odd man fronts. Mm-hmm. So what that basically means is there's anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5 guys lined up across the defensive front. So basically, what Adam is saying is Leal is able to go from an edge rusher all the way down to the zero technique, which would be head up of the center. That's extremely valuable in today's NFL. So let me just kind of paint a picture of what that could look like on the field. So because he's such a big bodied guy, having him on the edge on early downs is very, you know, it's good for defending the run and things like that. Whereas kicking him inside, you know, where that 3 technique, 5 technique on obvious passing downs, that's where, you know, Adam is suggesting that his scheme versatility could really be attractive to the Falcons. I like Leo. He's a massive dude. I don't think Terry Fontenot really can go wrong with the 8th pick, just because there's such a rich all the prospects that are, you know, should be 1 through 5 are going to fall, because I guarantee you it happens every year that all these quarterback needy teams come up and overdraft a guy. You know, this might be the year where, you know, a quarterback doesn't get drafted in the top 10. I call bullshit. I mean, I've seen that a couple times. I call bullshit. There's just like in the real world, there's dumb franchises and they will do dumb things.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't EJ Manuel like the 8th pick?
I was just going to bring up EJ Manuel.
Yeah, that's so funny. I think EJ was like 8 or 13 or something like that.
If I wanted to say 13. Can go in any draft, like in the first, in the top, whatever, 15, like, yeah, a quarterback could go. Like, I don't know. I keep hearing rumors that 3 quarterbacks are destined to go in the top 10, which, like, for me as a Falcons fan, as long as we're not one of them, I'm like, send some prospects our way. Like, I would love that, right?
Yeah, and you talk about playing inside out, too. That's why I really thought Atlanta was going to be interested in Carlos Basham last year. Mm-hmm. He's kind of in that same mold. If you're familiar with Carlos Basham, he's a better player.
Yeah.
Or he was a better prospect. Let me correct.
Basham was one of my draft crushes last year. He went to Buffalo, of course. Like, same thing. Yeah, exactly. I like, and like the reason why I like that is because if you look at like what the Saints have built, like, I know we all hate the Saints, but their D line is just so damn impressive. You guys just pumped out an article about Carl Granderson and Shai Tuttle. Like, those two would be, like, I know they're depth pieces for the Saints, but those guys would be key contributors for us year one.
Yep, exactly. Hunter, who are you thinking for 8?
Yeah, so I'm normally, like, on Twitter blasting between Kyle Hamilton and David Ojabo. But today I'm going to talk about David Ojabo because that's kind of who I've been on the past few weeks for a few different reasons. He's a dominant raw edge who has only been playing football since his junior year of high school. So there's just a lot of untapped potential there, I think. And I think having a DC like Dean Pease, he would know how to get the most out of him. Ojabo is a freak athlete, so he can drop into coverage, he can rush the passer, set the edge, he can do it all. And the thing that's like most appealing to him, or like for me, I guess, is the fact he can get Steven Means off the field. I'm so damn tired of seeing Steven Means on the field. And Ojabo would just be an immediate upgrade over our entire edge group as a whole right now.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about dropping into coverage. I think most frustrations with Steven Means lie when he drops into coverage. Obviously, he can't get after the quarterback, but most casual fans won't, you know, notice him getting stonewalled on every single play. They notice him in coverage when the ball comes near him and he just looks helpless out there. In Dean Pease's scheme, you're going to have to drop your outside linebackers. And you make a good point that Ojabo is that versatile to be able to do that. Ade Ogundeji, I don't know if he is. He didn't look comfortable in it. Obviously, he's a rookie and these guys grow, you know, exponentially from year to year sometimes. So that could change. But I do like the Ojabo pick. I don't think, again, I'm going to keep saying this. I don't think Fontenot can go wrong with anyone at 8. I mean, offensive line, defensive line, cornerback, safety, Kyle Hamilton. I really, there's just so many good prospects that are going to be available that, you know, he says he's going to do best player available, but it won't even matter. They're going to get a playmaker on one side of the ball or the other. So, you know, Falcons fans should expect, obviously not a Kyle Pitts-esque player. You know, he's once in a generation type guy, but they're going to have an opportunity to get a real difference maker. Jake, who do you think?
So, we're just going to have to talk about a couple guys because there's no way we can narrow this down to four because I'm looking at my list and we're not.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, we'll circle back. We may even do a second round. But I'll go with Kyle Hamilton. And much like taking a tight end fourth overall, taking a safety ninth overall is one of the things where people are going to be like, positional value, all this. None of that really matters. If you watch Kyle Hamilton's film, there is nothing on a football field that he can't do. I bet you he could kick a damn 45-yard field goal if he had to. So you can watch this guy. He'll set up on the back end, and he'll be on the opposite side of the rover, and he'll drop all the way back to the other side of the field, and he can absolutely erase half of the field on that side. And if the ball goes to the other side on a quick out or a little dump down pass, he'll be over there. He'll be one of the first guys to the ball. And if one of the most special plays that you'll see is in that Florida State game, he seriously came from the boundary receiver and made an interception and toe tapped on the opposite sideline. That's just absurd. And, you know, and you talk about somebody that makes other people on the field better. He's a bona fide leader. He's a guy that's going to elevate the whole defense. When you have somebody on the back end that can play center field, support against the run, play man coverage, do all these different things, it can mask a lot of talent deficiencies. So you're improving the defense, not only because you're adding, you know, a true X factor, but you're adding a guy that's going to make everybody else better.
Yeah. The arguments against Hamilton don't hold any water for me.
No,
I think he's a statist.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, all these guys say there's too many holes to just, you know, that's a luxury pick. That's a luxury pick. The Falcons don't have the luxury to just go and get, you know,
the Falcons need good players.
They just need good players. That is the truest statement I've ever heard. I mean, there are so many needs for this team that everyone is welcome. I mean, any and all positions are welcomed regardless of their positional value. I get it, and I am a firm believer in positional value. I mean, I started the never draft a running back until the third round club. I mean, I started that. So I really believe that. Except
hell
for
no,
the top 10.
No.
I mean, we can go back
round,
to
the, not in the first round. In the second
Saquon
round,
Barkley is the biggest fuck up I've ever seen of a team. I mean, they just blew their load all over. I mean, what are they doing? That's the kind of organizational dysfunctional organization that is going to do something that lands one of these top five prospects in the Falcons' lap at eight, which is why I'm going to be a homer and put my boy Derek Stingley up on a pedestal.
Easily.
This guy is unbelievable. Obviously, this is a pipe dream. You know, a lot of things will have to go right for the Falcons to land Derek Stingley. But if they do, I mean, it's a home run. You got two corners who are going to be at the top of the league at their position for a decade. Stingley was the best cornerback as a freshman in 2019. I mean, he's the best athlete I've ever seen on a football field. I went to LSU and I went to his high school games. And this was before I knew who he was, Derek Stingley. And I'm just, you know, scouting some of these guys. It was I was working for a magazine called Louisiana Gridiron Football. And I see this guy, he takes a punt and returns it, you know, 80 yards for a touchdown. And it looked like he was in fast forward while these other guys, you know, were just walking. And then on the next possession, he picked off a pass and then returned it for a touchdown again. And I was stunned. I was like, who is this guy? Long story short, you know, he's the number one recruit in Louisiana. I'm not finding this guy before anyone else, obviously. But it's just to show that this guy has always been the best athlete on the field since he was probably in fourth grade. I mean, his dad has been cultivating him to play football. This kid doesn't know anything other than the gridiron. I mean, I love that. He is by far and away the best man-to-man corner. And I know some people are going to be, oh, sauce this, sauce that. I don't care. Derek Stingley has the best press man technique of maybe anyone since Patrick Peterson. He's got the athletic ability and speed to even win. He gets beat off the lines. He's got the athletic prowess and speed to recover. He's got the most fluid hips I've ever seen. And with all those things, he's always in a good position to make a play on the ball. He's one of the best ball hawking cornerbacks I've ever seen. This guy picks off anything in, you know, a 5-yard radius of him. I mean, this, obviously, you know, pipe dream guys. Stingley's probably going third or fourth. I mean, this guy's not going to make it outside of the top five. And if he does, I mean, that's a crime. But to kind of give another guy, I just want to, you know, bring this guy up and see what you guys think of him. He's the only other corner I've gotten eyes on, and I really like him, though 8 might be a little rich for him, is Trent McDuffie. I really like Trent McDuffie. What do you guys think about him?
Well, I haven't watched much McDuffie because there's like 7 corners that I would consider in the first round. I was going to say for the next one, I was either going to say Andrew Booth or Roger McCreary. But from, you know, Washington, they've got a rich bloodline with corners, you know, before injury. Sidney Jones was a really good prospect. Of course, Desmond Trufant. But from what I understand, McDuffie's kind of more of a, he's a smaller guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's about 5'10", 5'11", I think, something like that.
Yeah, he's kind of built like a standard nickel corner.
He reminds me a lot of Brent Grimes. Like, when I watch him, like, he's super athletic, and, like, his motor runs hot all the time. Like, dude, we were watching – I think we were watching ZTF from Washington, who didn't declare this year. I'm not even going to pronounce his last name because I can't even do it. we were watching him, and they did an end around with like a lot of like traffic in McDuffie's way. And I don't know how, but McDuffie like tracked this thing for a loss of -2 yards from the other side of the field. And I was like, whoa, like, who is this guy? And then I think Hunter brought up, oh, that's McDuffie's draft eligible this year. I was like, what the heck? And he immediately caught my eye. But yeah, he's like Brent Grimes a lot. Like he always seems like he has something to prove because he's smaller, but it doesn't surprise me. Like Asante Samuel, he went in the second round too, but he had no business going. Asante Samuel Jr., that is. Sorry, we're all old here. But he had no business going in the second round last year. He went in the second round. Chargers got an absolute steal of a left cornerback in Staley's scheme, and he was rock solid this year. But I just want to speak just generally on your guys, both those first-round picks. I think people have to take into context who Dean Pease is. There's a rich, rich history of Dean Pease being a solid, like, secondary kind of guy. So he wants to have these, like, great secondaries where he can play a multitude of coverages. Like, you've seen the coverages that we ran this year. There was a lot of, like, Tampa 2, Cover 1 with a rabbit in the hole. Like, different kind of coverages where guys are dropping, pulling, going deep third, all those kind of things. That's where a guy like Kyle Hamilton is so versatile, because he not only playing the deep third in like 20 plus yards downfield, but he's also coming up in the box to try to jump something and take to the house. For me, Kyle, I keep seeing, I'm just not there with Kyle Hamilton. I don't understand how he improves the thing. If you're getting guys that can jump routes at a proper rate, you're going to create more turnovers, and guys, like, you know what I mean? There's going to be bigger plays to be made from the defense and standpoint. And like, one argument I always see when I post a mock draft, and it's not a pass rusher in the first round, and Derek Stingley and Sauce Gardner have been first round picks in my mock drafts. You got to understand, like, we've been playing a ton of man press this year. So he wants to get in your face and get ugly. Like, a guy like Sauce Gardner, a guy like Derek Stingley, guys who relish that opportunity to go one-on-one with you. Like, those are the kind of guys that you need, because they bring attitude, playmaking ability to get points on the board from a defensive standpoint. Like, those guys are big guys that create in different ways. And you got to remember, Dean Pease, like he's been saying, if you watch anything that Dean Pease has been on, he said he likes to create his own pressure. So he's sure of his coverages in the back end that he can create his own coverages with, I wouldn't say lesser talent, but that's what it is. Like, I'm not saying don't put any resources in there, but he probably thinks he can get a decent raw pass rusher in the third round, have him come in and give us some good solid pressures, or draft a guy in the second round like Christian Harris, the linebacker out of Alabama, who brings people to the absolute woodshed all the time. and blitz from the A gap and create pressure that way. So people got to take into context who Dean Pease is. And he comes from that Nick Saban, Bill Belichick school of thought, where I'm going to back everybody up and you're going to throw it short, and then we're going to hit you in the mouth, like that kind of style of football. So I just want to get that. But Trent McDuffie is a guy that I absolutely love. Athletic player. People are going to hate on him because of his height and weight. He's not 6'2", 200 pounds, like how everybody wants the corners to be. And honestly, yeah, like I do too. But whenever you see an athletic corner like that, he obviously catches your eyes, because a guy like Brent Grimes, a guy I wish we never, ever got rid of, just because he was such a solid playmaker, is a guy that I absolutely would love here.
That's another thing too, you know, going back to what you said with we all love Ahmad Gardner. I was kind of on him early in the process, because I remember before I'd really started watching anything, I looked at his scouting report and I'm like, this guy sounds insane.
Yeah.
And then I saw some of his stats, never given up a touchdown, averages like 2.6 yards per catch, giving up like a 29% completion percentage. Mm-hmm. And then when you watch this kid, he is trying to whip your ass at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah.
He is getting hands on you. He will push you in the dirt if he can. Mm-hmm. And I just love that long, lengthy physical corner. Right next to AJ Terrell. I don't know how you can, like, I just don't know how you can pass on that when you already have an all-pro corner. If you can get two, yeah. There's not a lot of teams in the NFL that have that.
Well, that's what I mean. And it comes down to also, like, you get that kind of cornerback play. Quarterbacks are going to have to get to their third and fourth read. How often do you get to your third and fourth read as a quarterback, Jake? Like, you would know. Like, it's hard to get there, especially in the NFL level, when you have two athletic, like, guys that, AJ Terrell showed it, like, we're playing this trail technique where they're baiting you. They're like, hey, throw it. We're gonna get you. So you have two guys like that. All of a sudden, that pass rush, we could put Hunter out there at defensive end, and likely he's gonna get there at some point.
Yeah, I agree. Pease talked about this in one of his, I think it was the press conference before the Saints game, the season finale, and he was just, you know, basically trying to illustrate for fans that, you know, manufacturing a pass rush isn't necessarily, you know, having, you know, Terrell Suggs come off. That was the example he used, who's just so talented. He just makes every system he plays in better because he can do things that nobody else can do. It's more than that. It's a yin and yang between the secondary and the pass rush. If you have this elite pass rush with no ability to press, these guys are just going to run slants and quick outs. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has been doing it to defenses for years with Devontae Adams. They just look at each other. A guy's 10 yards off the ball, 5 yard out, 5 yards, just like that. Don't even give those, you know, all pro edge rushers a chance to get them. That's what good offenses do. The counterpoint to that is if you have guys who can press and make the quarterback hold the ball, it's always going to give your defensive line more opportunity to get after the quarterback. So it's a yin and yang thing. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. You know, any of these cornerbacks, if the Falcons don't come away with, you know, one of the cornerbacks that we just listed, there's seven of them that I would be happy with. It'll be a real shame. I mean, it's littered with great guys. They're all going to turn out great, I think, as far as I've seen. You know, that elite, those elite cornerback prospects.
Yeah, and one of the last things I'll say before I pass this on to Hunter, Andrew Booth is absolutely in that category too. Andrew Booth is a monster, huge corner, great ball skills. And, you know, if the Falcons get to the second round and somebody like Kyir Elam, who everybody has seemed to have forgotten about, you know, maybe even Sauce Gardner, I think, TDN and PFF have him in the 30s, which I think is crazy. But if one of those guys is there in the second round and they already took a corner, I wouldn't mind taking a third one. A lot of people probably wouldn't like it, but when you talk about taking the best player on the board, you know, you talk about Richie Grant, Isaiah Oliver potentially coming back, Jalen Hawkins. That's a nice looking young secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, but Hunter, you got anybody else you want to highlight before we move on?
I mean, I was just going to kind of talk for a minute, like, about how good this edge class was, too, and, the, like, CB class, like, the yin and yang thing. Like you were saying, there are, like, seven or eight corners that are, you know, starting caliber guys right off the bat. And that's the same thing with the edges, too. We have, like, Ojabo, Hutch, Carl Loftus, Tibbs, and then not to mention all, like, the kind of tweener guys, like Trayvon Walker, DeMarvin Leal, And then in the second round, you got like Myjai Sanders, Kingsley from South Carolina. And like, it's such a good class that I don't think there's any way to fuck up our first two picks, is provided you go CBDE in some way, shape, or form. Absolutely. As long as you go that way, you're going to be adding the defense in the exact way that Dean Pease wants. And you just, I don't think we'll fuck it up, but there is a way. It is Atlanta. We have a tendency to do that. But
I think the Falcons know better than to take a quarterback. And I think taking a quarterback at eight would really be the only way they could really nosedive this draft. Unless
I can't do it, man. If we take it, I can't do it. If we take a quarterback at eight, like, I don't know where you guys were about quarterbacks last year. But if we like pass up at the prospect of like Fields or Mac Jones for like Sam Howell, I'll be really upset. And like, I like Sam Howell, but I don't like him eight. Sam Howell, like, you know what I mean?
The only one I really do like is Matt Corral, and Matt Corral is not worth the eighth pick. I would take Matt Corral at 25.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a little devil's advocate and predict, you know, the least attractive eighth overall pick. And it's got to be somebody like Evan Neal or somebody that, you know, the entire fan base would just be like, who, you know, what did we just do? Draft an offense, you know, blah, 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 blah. Who ends up becoming a really good player for us? I could see the Falcons going that direction. Absolutely. If they have, you know, Neal or golly, I don't know that other tackle's name.
Charles Kwanu?
Yeah.
Oh, Charles Kwasin. I thought Kwanu from NC State was another guy.
He's a monster.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't mind offensive tackle. Like, when we start getting into, like, Linderbaum, I know Linderbaum is, like, a really good center.
He's a pure center. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, that's so rich for me. Like, it's whatever, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just, like...
Now we're really weeding into positional value. You take a center.
Like,
you know what
I mean? Like, this is probably going to Alex. Is just, like, stop talking at him. What are you talking about? We can't take a center at eight. What are you talking about? But, like...
I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, like, there's people that are, like... Yeah, like I'll take him at eight, and like I honestly get it, but for me, like if Hunter knows, like with Evan Neal and Ikwanu, they do this catch technique where they just ragdoll you down and just like jump on you and pancake you. We have no offensive linemen that do that currently, and I just want somebody like a Trent Williams who's just a heat seeking missile and just willing to take your life on every single play. And like that's Ikwanu and Evan Neal to a T. So those are my kind of guys as well.
So I'd like to pose a hypothetical trade down scenario. Let's say the Falcons trade back into, you know, mid to late teens, early 20s. The prospects look much different. Obviously, a top 10 prospect isn't going to be somewhere, you know, it's very rare that a top 10 prospect makes it to the 20s. But let's get into, you know, that hypothetical. What if the Falcons trade down? Who are some other prospects that will be available in the middle to late first round that would be there in that case?
Hunter, you can go first on this one.
Okay. A guy that I would probably be really intrigued by if he's there is Jordan Davis from Georgia.
Son of a bitch. No.
I mean, like, I think Jordan Davis is an elite defensive tackle prospect. I don't know if I love him at eight just because you can only value a nose tackle so highly. But if we're picking at like 15 or something and he's there and we can grab him, I'm very much on board for that. Elite run stuffer, just freak athlete who we can do a lot of different things with. He'd open up the lanes for Dean Pease's A-gap blitzes. He'd take pressure off Grady Jarrett in a lot of ways and times. And I think it would just open up a lot of our defenders to potentially overachieve from what they did this year. Yeah, that's probably who I would pick, is probably Jordan Davis.
What about you, Adam?
You know, I'll go. I didn't want to get Georgia Homer here, so I won't. With the hometown podcast with you guys. So, I don't know. I'll say Charles Cross. His offense tackle I liked. He looked like initially when I first started watching him, he looked really light in the pants. He's surprisingly like really athletic and really strong at the point of attack. He's just got small legs, which is so weird for an offensive lineman. But he's just a quick, really good for the outside zone scheme that we're going, that can really get outside, seal those second level blocks. He's not like Ekwonu and Neil that's going to lay you out, but he's more like a Jake Matthews kind of clone, kind of similarity. He'll finesse you, but sometimes he allows pass rushers into his chest and gets dominated that way. But he was a guy I liked. I'll just say for the fun of it, N'Kobe Dean, like he's actually an absolute.
He took it right out of my mouth. Go ahead.
He's an absolute missile. People are gonna say, you know, like he's only 5'11" or 6 foot or whatever. Like Denzel Perryman has had no problem creating a really good niche for himself in the league, and N'Kobe Dean, I think, is a better player than Denzel Perryman coming out, and I liked Perryman coming out a lot. But he's just like anything you want him to do. Like I feel like if we said, here's a brick wall, run through it, N'Kobe Dean would do it for the team, right? Just seeing him and Tyndall in the natty, and he just fully held him accountable. Like, when was the last time you've seen a Falcons defender do that? Like, hey man, get your head on straight. We're trying to win here. Like, this is what we're trying to do. Like, to me, I love Foy, but I think Dean comes in and would just be an absolute asset. Like, even though I don't want an off-ball linebacker, I could totally get N'Kobe Dean in like that 15-16 range if that's where he goes. I'm sure that there's going to be a huge knock because of his size, but I mean, Roquan Smith I think he made all pro this year, and he's about the same size. So those Georgia linebackers are just built different, I guess.
Yeah, and that's your team captain too, man. That guy is he's smart. He's a mechanical engineering major, intelligent player. Like you said, he can.
I didn't know that. Faster.
Yes, very smart.
I learned
smart
that
guy
during the Natty. Somebody was
3.8, 3.9 GPA, something like that. Incredibly smart kid. You know, he's a coach's dream, and that's really all you can say about him. He'll do anything you ask him to do. Love N'Kobe Dean, and if they trade Deion Jones, which I don't think is too out of the realm of possibility, if somebody actually wants him.
It's probability at this point.
Yeah, it's on the table. You know, I don't think that's too out of bounds either. And, you know, we'll get into who we like on day three. But Channing Tindall is absolutely on that list as well.
Absolutely.
Tindall has some of the most incredible sideline-to-sideline speed that you can find.
Yeah, an underrated attribute that, you know, most fans in general don't account for is, you know, in between the ears. Fontenot, Smith, and Pease want high character individuals. Kyle Hamilton's a high character individual. N'Kobe Dean is another one. So don't be surprised if, you know, one of these guys falls into the Falcons' lap and they take them because they're so reliable on and off the field. Mm-hmm. It's not just about, you know, what they can do, you know, when the ball is snapped. It's accountability. It's, you know, personal accountability, but also accountability for the team. Just like you mentioned, getting on guys' asses. I remember that drive. Tyndall had two guys getting his ass on that drive. I don't remember which safety it was, but a safety was telling Tyndall, you know, bump that tight end, bump that tight end. You know, don't let him get a free release. He gets a free release. He has like a 10-yard out, and he takes it, you know, 40 yards down into the red zone. And then it seemed like the next play, Tyndall just let a guy cross his face, and, you know, N'Kobe Dean did what he did, and that's just because he's a great athlete. But then, you know, you saw Tyndall make that sack, and, you know, it comes back around. But I just wanted to point out that I couldn't notice, but Tyndall fucking up on that drive. But let's get into, you know, round two.
Hang on, one more. So I did want to point this out too. If the Falcons go back like 15, 20, this is when I would really be okay if they started looking at a Chris Olave, a Jameson Williams, a Garrett Wilson, somebody like that. And I'm not going to really turn my nose up at it. However, I think he's worth the pick at 8, but we'll go triple dogs here. Trayvon Walker is going to be a star in the NFL. Georgia asked Dan Lanning and Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart asked him to do a lot of stuff. I've seen Trayvon Walker line up in a 3-point stance and drop into coverage and deflect a slant over the middle. Like, that kid has so much range, so much athleticism. He can do so much for a defense. Day one starter, plug and play. I think he'd be a home run pick if you do trade down and you're looking to get somebody on the defensive front.
Yeah, I agree. Walker, he was a guy, one of our scouting buddies, Lorenz, turned me on to, and he actually seeked me out. He said, well, what's your thoughts on this guy? And I didn't know much about him until that point. And he's a physical player, man. He fits across that front, much like DeMarvin Leal does, where you can just play everywhere, not be a liability anywhere. So, he'd be a guy that I would like to. I hate that we just went three Georgia players right there.
Look, when your defense sets a record for points given up per game, I'm going to say
you have to at that point.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what I mean. I get it. I totally get it. But let's talk about Garrett Wilson since he's from my Buckeye. No, just joking. It's all we got this year. That's all we got. It's all right.
So I'll continue the train. A day two guy like is Devontae Wyatt. I mean, he's other, you know, Georgia defensive tackle.
I like him too.
he's the other, you know, UGA guy. He doesn't have the length that Jordan Davis probably has, but he's versatile. You know, he played everywhere from 0 to 5 at UGA, 0 to 5 technique. In the few games I watched him, he probably is a 3 tech. He is incredibly explosive off the ball, similar to a Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett is much more athletic and uses his leverage much better than Wyatt does. But Wyatt does both of those things very well. He's extremely explosive and also plays with incredible leverage. And those things are important when you just have that average length, which, you know, Grady does, Wyatt does. So he's a guy I really, really am high on. He's rock sturdy. I mean, he can play all over the line. I love him. I think this is going to be a trend going as we get closer to the draft. It's just going to be guys gushing over all these UGA defenders. But, I mean, how can't you? I mean, they're unbelievable.
I'm going to squat on this take. I'm not going to proclaim it to the world just yet. But I think Devontae Wyatt's better than Jordan Davis.
I've been hearing that for a long time.
So what I've said, and I think this is going to hold true, Jordan Davis, what he does best, he is better at than what Devontae Wyatt does best. But Devontae Wyatt offers you much more, and I think he can be a pass rush demon. That, you know, he might get stuck at a 3 tech. I think he plays more of that end role, lining up over a guard. And if he can win those one-on-ones with somebody like Grady Jarrett next to him, that's going to cause a lot of problems. And I think he's a guy that could absolutely sneak into the first round, the back end. But day two, I think he's a steal.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your day two picks? What are your dreams there?
I'm going to go Kingsley from South Carolina, Kingsley and Nogbear. However you pronounce his last name, I'm terrible at pronunciations. But that's my boy. I absolutely love his tape. He's a pass rush specialist. He's not great at setting the edge, which is something you'd have to work on. But dude is a phenomenal pass rusher. He can do it from standing up. He can do it with the hand in the dirt. He's just very good at it. And I think grabbing him would offer versatility for the Falcons defense. He kind of fits the mold that Fontenot likes, which is he's 6'4", 265. So he's kind of like a bigger guy, athletic enough to where you can move him around. That's probably be my dream pick there. Another name I'm going to throw out real quick, though. I don't think I'd mind Sam Howell in this range, to be honest with y'all.
Okay.
He's mobile. He's got a decent arm. I think he's going to Justin Herbert us because this year he had no weapons, no O-line. I think he has the potential to be a solid starter, and I wouldn't mind him in the second round.
Adam, who you got?
I'm usually a pass rush guy, but I'm going to try to avoid pass rush today and go actually, I guess I'm not. But Travis Jones, he's an interior defense lineman out of UConn. A lot of guys don't know about this guy, but he's, I think he's 6'4", 340 or 330. But he... Like from a tool standpoint, I think he's better than Wyatt, and I liked Wyatt a lot, and I like Fildarian Mathis from Bama as well a lot as those nose tackles that can also pass rush. So guys that are 3-down defense, interior defense alignment. I have Travis Jones as my top pass rushing interior defense alignment right now. Just his combination of power and his hands is something that you don't see too often, and I'm not quite sure why the hype's not there yet with him. It could be something where he just needs more exposure through the draft process. But when people see that he's about 6'4", 6'5", and 330, and he moves laterally as well as he does just going straight. They're going to be all in on this guy, and he's going to be a guy that has like a 15-year career because he can just get after the pass rusher or get after the quarterback very, very well. He's nimble. He can work stunts really well. So just I'm just envisioning him and Grady Jarrett working off of one another from the interior and just absolutely collapsing pockets. And that's something that I'm all in on. So he's a guy out of UConn, not obviously like a school that pumps out massive talent, but he's a guy. And then in the run defense, like he just stonewalls he two gaps for UConn, covers two gaps, jacks as a man, and then he moves where he wants to go, and he's pretty quick across that D line as well. Another guy I absolutely loved was Darian Beavers from Cincinnati. If you look at the way Dean Pease wants to use his inside linebacker, Darian Beavers fits that mold really, really well. Like he's like a Dante Hightower type of player, where he could play on the edge, he could play as inside linebacker. And he can blitz a multitude of ways, but also not be a liability in coverage. So Darian Beavers, 6'4", 255. I think if you look at the way that we run those 3-3-5 sets, and we're using Foy kind of in that mix, where I would rather Foy drop back a bit more, Darian Beavers would be such a great fit for the scheme. And like he's personally probably my, like besides Ojabo, as a jack pass rusher, Darian Beavers would probably be my ideal inside linebacker for what Dean Pease is trying to do.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up Travis Jones, and the way you described him reminds me a lot of Damon Harrison. That's kind of who I was hearing whenever you were describing him.
Yeah,
Harrison didn't put up a ton of sacks, but I feel like he's that big guy that's going to eat up space and has a just, you know, freak athleticism.
Oh, he's like, I honestly, if you're into watching draft prospects from the All-22 standpoint, he's got reps where he's just absolutely mauling offensive guards, and he got double teams this whole time, but he still maintains his two gaps, which is he's an ox. Like I refer to him as an ox, like I did to Marvin Leal. If we had a situation where we had Leal on the end, Grady and Travis Jones in the middle, that's a lot of beef up front, and ain't nobody running on that.
All right, Alex, you go ahead.
I'll go to a position we haven't really touched on quite, you know, extensively, is David Bell. He's a receiver.
Yeah, I shouldn't have let you go first.
He's a receiver. He's a Boilermaker, and we love our Boilermakers. He is a big-bodied receiver. I think he's like 6'2", 6'3", 210, something like that. He's got incredible body control. You know, he's a threat after the catch, which is important in this offense, or Smith's offense. I think he had maybe 95, just under 100 catches with like 25 broken tackles. So breaking a tackle on one in every four reception is impressive. I don't care who you are. And he fits the mold of an Arthur Smith wide receiver, similar to, you know, that AJ Brown-esque guy, that real physical, big body guy, you know, can run the digs, can run those in breaking routes, and put his body on the line, willing, not only able to, but willing to. David Bell is a guy that, you know, is going to be available on day two, round two or three, I don't know, but he'll be there at some point for the Falcons. They've got three picks in those two rounds, and especially with all the speculation surrounding Calvin Ridley. I mean, the Falcons have one wide receiver under contract in 2022. You know, it's Frank Darby if Calvin Ridley gets traded. I mean, that position group is going to need some bolstering, and David Bell is a guy who can come in and start, you know, build a repertoire with Matt Ryan, start to trust him. You know, he can be a great piece for this offense. I really like him.
Yeah, I love David Bell as well. And I wanted to talk a little bit about receivers. I could really annoy you guys and start talking about George Pickens, but I'm not going to do that.
I knew he was coming.
I'm not going to do that.
I think he's overrated.
George Pickens, though. I want Pickens in Atlanta. So
I think he's overrated.
I've heard that. Like, so a couple of few people have said that. I'm not – I have way too many Falcons followers. I'm not I'm not going there. I'm not trying to get unfollowed by a billion of you guys.
I'll go with a different. I still somehow managed to come back to Georgia, but he's not a Georgia right now. I'm going to go Jermaine Johnson. I think with the way he'll test, he will get into the first round. But for now, I feel like he's in that second round range. When you talk about if you want to sculpt a pass rusher, their body, their speed, athleticism, Jermaine Johnson's that guy. You know, he doesn't have a ton of production, but he's got the type of body and the type of athleticism and just raw gifts that you can mold into something really special. I don't think Drake London's another guy. I don't think he'll be available, but he's definitely going to be in consideration. And keep an eye out for my last guy, Cam Thomas out of San Diego State. He's another super athlete, works all over the front. He's a guy I just became familiar with a few weeks ago. Very versatile up front, absolutely dominated at San Diego State. They were a good program. I think they finished top 25. I don't know if they won their bowl game. Super explosive, incredible get off. I really like Cam Thomas a lot. He's another guy that I think as when the combine starts rolling around and it really gets down to the nitty gritty, I think he's a guy that's going to start making a lot of noise in round two.
Yeah. I want to just mention one more name, Wandell Robinson. He's a guy, you know, if you follow
year there's a draft crush. It's him all the time, man.
We'll wait on him.
And if you follow Eric Robinson, he works for the Falcoholics sometimes. This guy, I mean, he's obsessed with Wandell Robinson, and rightfully so. I mean, he's electric. He is lightning in a bottle. I would be shocked if he made it outside of the top 100 picks. You know, he doesn't have that ideal size. He doesn't use his hands too much when catching balls. You know, he's a body catcher. But when you're as electric as he is after the catch, it really doesn't matter. Arthur Smith has shown an ability to bring in guys like Cordero Patterson. He tried it with Felipe Franks, but these out-of-box guys, you know, that you really have to get creative if you want to make it worth the pick. Wandell Robinson is one of those guys. But I just wanted to mention that. I'd be remiss if I didn't. So I wanted to segue that into maybe some of the day three targets, which, you know, some people might not know, so you might have to do a little bit more explaining. But some day three targets and, you know, maybe some draft sleepers. Sleepers can be guys who won't go until the sixth round, or they're guys who sneak in the first round that just aren't getting, you know, the coverage that, you know, some of these other guys are getting. So I'll start with you, Hunter.
Okay, so one of the guys I'm going to hit for like the day three one is Jalen Tolbert, the receiver from South Alabama. He's a 6'3" vertical threat type guy. Similar to Darby in a lot of ways, but I think he's a little bit better of an athlete than Darby was coming out, and a little bit better of a route runner. He wins a lot with just his size and physicality. He has a little bit of burst, good vertical guy. Not really a yak daddy like I think Arthur Smith's going to want, but I think he's a guy that we need in the receiving room, because outside of, you know, our receivers and all the ones we have on the roster, we don't really have anybody over 6'1", I don't think. And Tolbert being 6'3" gives us some blend of size and speed that would be essential for, you know, Matt and whatever quarterback we get after Matt, like going forward. And then the other sleeper I have is Perrion Winfrey from Oklahoma, the defensive lineman. I just think he reminds me a lot of Neville Gallimore. And I think he's just going to shoot up draft boards and have an incredible week down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. I think he's a guy who isn't really getting enough attention right now, but I think he's going to shoot up, and he's an incredible athlete, just incredibly disruptive, violent at the point of attack. And I just, he's a guy that, like, I would be banging the table for if I was in a war room.
Yep. Adam.
Yeah. I'm looking through these prospects. I'm thinking like Hassan Haskins, from Michigan. I fucking hate that school, but you know, it is what it is. Kids are physical. I comped him to Latavius Murray. He's that kind of stand up power runner that is really, really tough. And, you know, he always falls forward. He's not going to get you like those 70, 80 yard runs like everybody wants, but you know, he gets that dirty work, and he can work the power in the inside zone stuff that we run. But I hate to go back to the woodshed here with Georgia, but James Cook, man, you look at the way that we use Cordero Patterson and hot take. I don't know if we should bring him back or not just because the money's a little bit messed up right now. But James Cook in that kind of role, I really feel like there's a lot of tread still on those tires coming out of Georgia. And I really feel like seeing him in that kind of featured like receiver. So I call it offensive weapon. Most people call it offensive weapon. I really see him being really, really good in that kind of role. Just being able to get the ball in space. Like people don't realize, like, Arthur Smith did a good job of that. We just didn't have those playmakers to make those extra, you know, that cut to make another 10 yards. James Cook is that guy. He'll make you miss in a hole. He'll make you miss out wide. He's a really good player. And we're going to have to talk about, like, tight ends. Like, whether we like it or not, like, Arthur Smith's got an affinity for tight ends. So I don't know if he goes day three or not. What's his name? Jeremy Ruckert from Ohio State, from my own school. But I think he's like that third, fourth round cusp player around there, just because like Ohio State doesn't use their tight ends. So he didn't really get the receiving options. And you're not really going to get balls over Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Jackson Smith-Jigba. So that's just he was just a byproduct of a good offense, right? So, but he is a good blocker. I don't think we bring back Hayden Hurst. I'm sorry, Hunter. I know it hurts your feelings. But I really feel like we're going to be looking for that tight end too, whether it be in free agency or whether it be in the draft. We played a ton of 12 personnel, so that second tight end is going to be on the field. Lee Smith retired per Kyle Pitts, actually, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
so he retired. Hayden Hurst probably not coming back. I do like Jesse Parker, but I don't think he's a tight end two. He's more of that tight end three / H-back. I think a guy like Rucker would be a really good gamble with big upside because he has a good athletic profile. He has really good hands and he can block. He just doesn't got the stats to go with all that. I'm really scared that at the Senior Bowl he's going to light it up, and then that's going to be, he'll be a second round pick all day at that point. But he's a guy that I could see. A guy that I'm going to touch on, but me and Hunter found out he's got some off the field stuff with Sam Williams from Ole Miss. He's an absolute rock star pass rusher. Nobody really talks about him. I think it's like an elephant in the room with his off the field stuff. I'm not going to sit here and speculate, but that's just what I heard from a source that Hunter and I really trust. So I could drop him down a little bit. If obviously you figure things out, he could be a steal on day. That's typically like special teams in day three, or guys that have off the field problems day three. Like that's typically how it goes, right? And I think Sam Williams fits in that mold. But he's a really, really good pass rusher. Like, anybody that follows my Twitter knows that I absolutely break down pass rushers like crazy. Sam Williams actually got a day two grade, a second round pick grade for me. But with that off the field stuff, I'm just gonna have to figure out like if that's true. And if it is, then he's obviously gonna tumble down the draft board a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You know, tight end is a sneaky need. Yeah. In this upcoming
they're all sneaky season. Needs. We need them.
Yeah,
all.
they're all sneaky needs.
We need everything.
I'm the biggest Lee Smith, Mercedes Lewis advocates. I mean, give me all of those guys. Mm-hmm. I love them. So Lee Smith leaving is a bigger deal than people, you know, than some fans are probably like talking about. The guy's a sixth offensive lineman. He's a big deal. But I wanted to talk about a guy that I cannot pronounce his name, so excuse me if you know him and I say his name wrong. But it's a Nebraska wideout. His name's Samori Tor. You've never heard of him because Adrian Martinez is a bum. Nebraska's passing offense was completely inept under him. Samori is electric. He's huge. He's that 6'3", 200-pound X receiver the Falcons are missing. He's a great deep threat. He can track the ball. He's shown an ability to track the ball downfield, but he's also good after the catch. Obviously, you know, I'm saying all these positives, and you think, well, why isn't he, you know, second round, third round, fourth round pick? He might be. You know, it's scouts' jobs to find these guys that nobody else finds. I guarantee you this guy is on people's boards and it's going to surprise some people in the league. I really, really like him. But, you know, I didn't even look at tight ends, to be completely honest, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Falcons came away with one tight end every single year Arthur Smith is at the helm. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
What about you, Jake?
So since you shouted out James Cook, my Alvin Kamara light, I'll shout out Haskell Garrett. I like him too, especially late.
Haskell interior. Rascal, my guy.
I mean, just a late interior defender. I feel like that's a pretty safe pick. He plays with a lot of energy. He's got a high motor. And obviously there's some injury concerns here, but you can't really ignore Justin Ross potentially falling down the board. Yeah. That's a potential impact receiver late. And then, of course, before I get to the last guy that is going to turn some heads, I would say I wouldn't really be surprised if they look to draft a right tackle to groom behind Caleb McGarry because he's likely gone after next year. Rashid Walker, Tyler Vrabel, Mike Vrabel's son. Who was the other one? Jackson Kirkland's another name. There's a couple of those guys. Max Mitchell out of Louisiana, you know, a couple of right tackle, swing tackle proteges, especially.
I love Max Mitchell. He's one of my huge sleepers. Him and the UTSA tackle. I absolutely love Spencer Bradford or something like that.
I was a big Spencer Brown guy last year, and he's been killing it with Buffalo. But somebody that they can groom behind McGarry that maybe move on from Matt Gunner. I don't know. Obviously, they like him to some degree. The running backs, Breece Hall, guys like that, Tyler Beatty.
Bailey's out. Brian Robinson, man. I'm a big fan on Brian Robinson, though.
Brian Robinson's in there, man. But, he's James Cook, man, I'm telling you, he's got that Alvin Kamara potential, and I don't think he'll go day three, obviously, but I'll shut up about Georgia players after this. But Darion Kendrick made him some money in the playoffs. And he would be a great corner if you're talking round three or round four if he's still there. And Bailey Zapp, it's the last guy I want to talk. So I was big on Grayson McCall. I was huge on Grayson McCall because I basically said, Grayson McCall, he's a guy you could probably get in the fifth, sixth round, and he'll be like a Gardner Minshew. He's a competent backup quarterback. A lot of energy, smart, teammate seems to like him. Bailey Zapp, man, you really can't ignore the numbers he put up, and it's a bad quarterback class. The guy broke Joe Burrow's FBS records, and nobody really batted an eye. He's just a guy that I feel like can run an offense. And if you're talking fifth round, sixth round, if he's still there, I think that's perfect. That's a perfectly appropriate time to take a swing on him, especially if you can trade somebody and get some extra picks, or trade back and get some extra picks. I think he'd be a perfectly fine project quarterback. He can move a little bit. The thing is, I'm going against my own principles. I always say when you're drafting quarterbacks, you want them to have something special about them, some kind of trait. And Zapp really doesn't have that as much. He's got a decent arm, but, I mean, he's got the production. You can't ignore the production. He seems like a good kid. Seems like he can run an offense. Seems like a smart guy. I don't think it would hurt.
Yeah, that's a good segue to our last little topic. If the Falcons acquire more picks, that would be a good pick. So, do you think the Falcons acquire more picks, and how? We know that they did so. Terry Fontenot did in his first draft as Falcons GM. He traded back with the Bills, was it? I don't know who it was.
It was the Broncos.
No, it was Broncos because they had Javonte Williams.
And we picked up Richie Grant with that pick. With Denver's second round pick. So what do you guys think? We have all been talking about all these needs. You know, you can only get so many guys unless you trade back and acquire more. So what do you think?
I think the big elephant in the room is Calvin Ridley. I don't know. Like, I know he sat out for mental health and you know, I obviously care about him, and I hope he found whatever he needed to do and got better with it. But like if it's true and you know he's ready to move on and we're ready to move on and it's a mutual part ways, I still think you get a first round pick. Like he was a 1400 yard 10 touchdown receiver. I'm just not letting him go for like a third. Like that's just not happening. He's a top five route runner in the league still, to this day. I don't care what he missed. He can be a Stephon Diggs for a team that's looking for a receiver. Like a good example is, Philly and the Jets that they have a young quarterback, needs guys that can create massive amounts of separation. that can take vertical shots downfield, and that's what the Jets and the Eagles want to do. So like I really feel like he fits those two schemes well. But you're just gonna have to figure out a way to give me a first or at least 2 seconds, something like that. And I like people will be upset at Calvin Ridley and whatever. Like if you want to be upset at him, go ahead. Like it's whatever. But if you look at it from like a roster building standpoint, it's completely irresponsible for us to pay $20 million for a luxury item like Calvin Ridley. And I absolutely love Calvin Ridley. So if you can nail down another first round pick and then you bookend that with getting like a Jordan Davis to go with Ojabo or something in the first round, like all honestly, regardless if Matt Ryan can't make that work, in the long haul, that's going to make our team better. And I think we can all speak, like, we just want to see the Falcons in the Super Bowl. We start winning in the trenches. Like, New Orleans Saints had fucking Jake back there for quarterback half the season, for all we know. And they still managed 10 wins, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's if you have good trench play, you're going to be a good team, and you're always going to be in the hunt. So if we can get that mentality here, and, you know, we get a first-round pick for Calvin Ridley, which I'm advocating for our left, right, and center. Like I like I said, it's really hard for me to go for anything less than a first round pick. I think Deion Jones, he's gonna net us like a fourth or fifth, which is always fun. Like I know we got Drew Dolman and Taquan Graham. Taquan Graham's a guy I really, really, really like on that D line. I don't want to forget about him when we're drafting and, you know, doing off season lookouts this year. And he turned those players in. Ade Ogundeji was a fifth round pick who, you know, he had a good 6, 7, 8 games to start. And then he hit a rookie wall and he really, you know, plateaued and hopefully next year he can turn into something. So if we can continue to get those good archetypes that they like across the D line and at outside linebacker and stuff like that, you know, those fourth and fifth round picks will be valuable for me. Like, if you're speaking trade back, I'm not a big trade back guy. I'm more of like, let me predict the way I want my draft to go rather than let somebody else predict my picks. So like at 8, like I'm staying at 8 because I know more than like the second one quarterback goes, I know I'm getting somebody that I love, because it's bound to happen. Teams reach all the time. And like we said earlier, EJ Manuel like had no business going the first two rounds probably in that draft. And yet he went. So somebody's going to fall in love with a Kenny Pickett, or somebody from the back behind us is going to trade up because they think Sam Howell's the guy or whatever, like, you know, the case may be. So at 8, I'm staying pat, and we already have 2 seconds. So, you know, I'm okay with my pick staying, but I think in terms of like, we could potentially have another first and a fifth or fourth for, Ridley and Deion Jones. And, you know, we got to hit on those picks now. And then we'll be better down the road because of it. I know people won't see that like right away. They'll be like, oh my God, Frank Darby's our number one receiver. But they're obviously not going into the season with that, right?
Yeah. And to serve your point, this team, we have 27 players under contract.
Yeah.
And like $14 million to spend. The Falcons need bodies. And so when you talk about guys like Taquan Graham and that, like they still serve a purpose, make no mistake.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you brought up good points about, you know, Ridley's worth a first. And I brought this up when the Julio Jones trade speculation was coming around, is that a conditional second round pick with, you know, first, it can move to a first round pick with play incentives, you know, snap, you know, it could be 70-80% snaps, is a great, I think, a great frame for a trade for Calvin Ridley. You know, there is a risk for trading for Calvin Ridley. Make no mistake about it. Mm-hmm. He took time away for himself, and everybody should respect that. I don't get why fans are jumping all over him because he, you know, sat out because he wanted to get traded. Don't be an idiot. Don't believe that stuff. And now all you've done, all you Falcon fans, by just berating this guy is guaranteeing that he's not going to come back. I mean, he was probably struggling with something. Now he's definitely struggling with something because all of you guys have just been harassing him. But that's beside the point. I just wanted to say that, you know, and I agree with you in pretty much all the things you said. I'm not a big trade back guy at all. If you believe in your big board and that guy comes on at eight and you pass on him just to get two guys instead of that one guy, you could really, you know, get yourself into trouble. I don't agree with it really in any scenario outside of, you know, somebody offering three first round picks to get a quarterback at eight. You know, it's just not going to happen. But the Calvin Ridley trade is going to happen at this point. I mean, there's in my experience, when, you know, Jeremy Fowler and Steve Weich, and all these respectable media pundits start, they're not declaring, you know, these are all speculations. This is what they think. They don't put their name behind anything that they don't believe in. So those men's words carry weight, and Falcons fans should probably get used to the idea that Ridley is going to be playing somewhere else next year. Just the big question is, what can the Falcons get for him? Because right now, I mean, if he's not going to guarantee he's going to come back in 2022, his trade value is not good. I mean, you're only worth what somebody will pay you. And, you know, he's worth a first-round pick every day of the week. Yeah, he's worth a first-round pick every day of the week, but it might not be that day of the week. So,
so my ideal scenario, I would say with Calvin, you can't tell me Philadelphia watched that playoff game with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Jalen Reagor looking like they've literally never played football before. You can't tell me they're not thinking about that. I think the lowest first round pick they have is 18. I could be completely wrong.
Hey man, give me that.
Something around there, whatever it is, whatever their lowest first round pick is to swap for Calvin Ridley when they have the cap space to extend him. I feel like that's a pretty even keeled deal. And if you look at a team like the Jets will probably be picking. I know they swap up the order in the first and second rounds. They're probably picking in the top four of the second round. I feel like that's almost a first round pick. That's pretty reasonable value. I could live with that. But I think if somebody offers you either one of those, I think you get the paperwork done before you're even off the phone. I feel like that's just an easy decision. You can get a Drake London, a Jahan Dotson, a Wilson, an Olave. You can get an immediate replacement, or you can get a defender, somebody like that, and work through free agency. But Deion Jones offloading, that would be immaculate. I would absolutely love that. And that's the thing. I do want to push back on what y'all said about trading down. I think it's okay if – like, I think it was Kevin from the Falcoholic. I think he said today that he had him moving back to like 12 maybe, and he picked up number 42. And if there's somebody that you really like, and that if you really like, just say like Roger McCreary or maybe Trayvon Walker or somebody like that, and you're kind of okay with a lot of your options, I think that's fine. But, you know, we're not going to know. If Kyle Hamilton's sitting there at eight and somebody's calling about a trade back, I'd just hang up. So So it really just all comes down to the war room on draft day. But Hunter, do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big trade back guy. I think you kind of do yourself a disservice. Like, obviously, if there's nobody on the board that you're in love with, then yeah, trade back if the option's there. But I think you're doing yourself a disservice and kind of doubting yourself and doubting your big board if you're going to be passing up on like some top guys that are there. Just because I think quality over quantity is very, very important when it comes to drafting. And that's why I'm not a big fan of the trade backs, because at that point, I feel like you're selling out on just trying to hit on dumb luck as opposed to actually doing the job. So that's kind of how I am with trading back. But then with Ridley, I think anything within the top 40 would be an immediate yes on my end, just because he does have those questions from him not playing this year. And the question mark of him next season, even if it is 40, like I'm doing that in a heartbeat, you know. Frees up a lot of money. I love Ridley to death, and I would hate to see him go. But as a fan base, we did not treat him right this year, and it was very disheartening to see that. So I hope for his sake it is just like a clean break, and he can go get a fresh start somewhere else. And we can see him still terrorizing the league going forward. Not against Atlanta.
I'm gonna be his fan, man. I hope he rocks a single digit somewhere so you can put him in the Hall of Fame.
it really comes down to like if if that's what he wants, man, you know, he's been around this team for a while. He's a respected member of this organization, and you should honor what he wants.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well,
that's why I don't get the Julio hate either. Like,
yeah, Julio, I didn't want to bring it up. That's a whole nother can of worms. But.
Oh. That's another can of worms.
Well, that's going to be our show, everybody. Thanks for listening. Adam, Hunter, thank you guys for coming on. It was awesome to talk ball with you guys.
Well, we'll absolutely do this again closer to the combine. Yeah. Right before the draft leading up, we'll do a big show on it. And we might do the dueling mocks. I'm probably going to steal that from you guys, by the way. Just
it's a good time, man. It's a good man. It's fun. Good.
Yeah, it's a good time. Yeah,
we got to get you guys on. How about that? We'll get you guys on ATB one time.
We'll see if you can beat me.
Man, I want that thing like 14 out of 17 weeks this year, man. Come
anytime,
on.
Anywhere.
The thing is the voters can be swayed by names. So you don't even have to pick the best player. Just pick the name they recognize the most. And
man,
you'll probably win.
He was a Georgia guy, man. He picked literally 7 rounds of Georgia. Man, I was so pissed.
Yep, there you go.
I was about to quit. I was like, no way. I'm like, there's no way that just happened. Man, you guys are wild down there. Congrats on the natty, by the way, Jake. I know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
you,
that.
I know you lived it up when you won it. So congrats to you guys. That was a heck of a game.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we really appreciate your time. Like we said, this is awesome, and we'll absolutely do it again a little closer to the draft, and we'll put some paint to the wall, and we'll really see if who can nail down some of these predictions.
Thank you guys.
Of course, thank y'all.
So for Jake Dampsky, Hunter, this is Alex Lord. This has been Talking Birdie. Thank you guys for listening.